Now the next area would be to get a glimpse of the ashrams. So then, the ashrams, basic principle, ashram means shelter. So this ashram is for the purpose of sheltering the living entity so that they can advance nicely in spiritual development. That is the purpose of it. So in considerations of the ashram, then one has to see what is the degree and what is the type of particular attachments that one has according to the conditioned nature, and then accordingly situate oneself in one of the ashrams. This is the basic principle. Because the ashrams themselves are simply for the purpose to give us that theoretical and practical knowledge that the material world is not actually the proper place for the living entity, and that the spiritual realm is the proper situation. So, what one looks at is first one must gain some knowledge. Then, accordingly, then we put ourselves in a situation to study. Then once we've gained this knowledge from that study and from that practice, as we discussed before, that knowledge is learned in these three phases. That one first hears about the knowledge, then one starts to practice it and try to understand the theoretical aspects, how it is working, how it is functioning, and then one gains realization. So this is what we are looking at in education. So both the aspect of hearing and the aspect of contemplation must be there. So student life means that we hear about the spiritual knowledge and we practice it. Then, when we're practiced at it, then after that, then we look and see, now, are my desires for, the situation that we are in as a student, the simple life, the simple facilities and all that, and how we are developing. Now, is that enough? Are we satisfied with that? Does that take care of our conditioned nature? And if so, then one can remain in that situation. But if we find that, no, there's a little bit more needs, the conditioned nature is still so many things are left there from previous lives, we have to deal with those things. Then we take up this process of the next ashram, Grihastha ashram. So now Prabhupada says first class brahmachari makes a first class Grihastha. So generally the first question comes out, well, why would a first class brahmachari get married? Right? But the point is there's two kinds of first class brahmacharis. Right? The first one means that by hearing about, it means he's heard the knowledge about the material world, and after hearing it and practicing, then he has realized it. So then the realization is obtained. One understands the material nature is not really, you don't want to get involved too much. Just how much you need. Keep body, soul together, that's it. And the realization has come. And we are able to work within that framework of realization. So if someone can, then he has already gotten the main element that one wants from the practice of ashrams. So then one can then stay as a brahmachari. This is called the Naistika brahmachari. Naistika brahmachari means he has the understanding of what the whole material emotional exchange, that platform, all what it means and what is the difficulties with it. And he can work nicely without it. Right? So this is called a naistika. So now they remain as brahmacharis and they go on serving the spiritual master. And as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out, then they can, one can go from that into sannyas without going through the grihastha and vanaprastha stages. But the essential element we see here is that realization. And realization we see means that knowledge is realized, and what does that mean? The first principle that comes up, Krishna talks about in knowledge, is humility. Right? So the tough brahmachari who gnaws on pieces of wood in the morning and spits every time he sees the women and this and that, that is not the naistika brahmachari. It may have been advertised like that, the tough, you know, real he-man brahmachari, but basically we don't see that it works. Right? Because after knowledge, the first quality that comes is humility. When we understand we're a servant of Krishna, humility comes. So the naistika brahmachari is very gentle and very, in his own way, kind of innocent, but very deep in their knowledge and realization. So it's a very interesting combination. You have a very mature spiritual person who basically has the lightness of a child. Right? So that's the naistika. Then the other first class brahmachari means he's had the same training, has the same understanding, means the depth of the scriptures, what it means, the whole culture, how everything works, the philosophy, how you apply it in your life. But the realization is not as deep. And so one knows that the material life is difficult, marriage life is difficult, all these different things. He's under no illusion. But there's still some emotional attachment is there. Right? The emotional attachment is there. That one feels still the need of that support of that ashram. And though one knows the dangers of it, one still, in their experience, in other words, in one's experience, by experience you can't say, yes, I understand. In other words, the naistika has already had these realizations in previous lives. So therefore, this life, it's very easy. They've already had the realization. They've done it. Right? What is it? Been there, done that. Right? But for the upakurvana, then that has not been achieved yet. Right? They haven't finished. The understanding, the complete understanding has not happened yet. So they're first class by their behavior, their knowledge, their service attitude, their devotion, but their realization is not on the same level as the naistika. So this person knows, then plans, they will get married, but it is not spontaneous, right? You don't find this kind of spontaneity in the first class. That comes in second, third, like this. Means there's a plan. Okay, we are brahmachari, we need to study for this much time to get how much knowledge we need, right? Means, in other words, if you're going to go into the grihastha ashram, some maturity is required, right? Some depth of understanding is required. Some practice is required. You know, practice in the devotional, being fixed in that, being fixed in the spiritual knowledge. So one decides, okay, for this much time, one is going to just very seriously practice the principles of brahmacharya, and one is going to study during this time. Then, when that time is finished, then only one gets married. So that is the upakurvana. It means things are planned, just like Krishna mentions in the Gita, that conceiving children according to religious principles, Krishna is that. Right? Because this is planned. This is system. This is first class. I mean, so according to duty, he sees. In my heart, I still have some faith that there is something there, something to be gained. So therefore, then one enters the Grihastha Ashram, and then the other, then we see how does that first class now apply. First class means now in the married life, then one sees, okay, these are the points that the scriptures are talking about. It talks about all these different problems that will come up, all these different mentalities, all the different obstacles of attachment, all those will come up. And one is not bewildered by them. One knows, the scripture says this, Bhagavatam says this. You know, everybody says this. And then he sees it, and then he gets the realization. Right? And because he's been a good student, a good follower, then he is also able to help the wife understand these same principles. So then the purpose means is after going through the Grihastha life in this very nice progressive way, then at the end of it, then one has the realization, okay, there's nothing here. Whatever we thought was here was just the exchange between the gross and subtle bodies. But the actual real taste is in the devotional service. So the only actual real substance to the whole Grihastha Ashram was the aspects of service. Husband and wife working together to become Krishna conscious. All the other things were not actually of substance. So this realization comes by that step-by-step progression. Then one finds both husband and wife are very satisfied. They've gone through the experience. They've done everything according to the prescribed duties. So all the proper experiences of the emotions and exchanges were there. Right? It wasn't a riot and throwing pots and pans at each other and stuff like that, you know? But, you know, or nowadays, you know, tape recorders and whatever else you can get your hands on. But it went very nicely because husband and wife followed the rules and regulations. But they saw after doing that, that what they thought they would get from that, they didn't get. Right? It was supposed to have given all satisfaction. It didn't. And then one starts to see, actually what gives us satisfaction is actually the chanting of the holy name, the association of the devotees, the hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the worship of the deity, residing in the Lord's place. These are what are giving the real taste. The others aren't actually giving the taste. Right? So they've been tasted and you see, well, actually this is not it. Right? Just give an example. It's just like we know Krishna prasadam is transcendental. Right? We know prasad is transcendental. And by taking prasad, you know, Krishna has tasted this and therefore that is what's very nice about the prasad. But we generally find in the beginning of our Krishna consciousness, you know, and we're taking prasad to maintain the body. Body and soul should stay together. If they're separated, a little difficult to practice sadhana bhakti. But if you keep them together, then it's more easy, right? So now in the beginning, when we're new, then we generally find that two things happen. It means even though we know the philosophy, then we find we eat more than what we need. And we generally like to eat only specific preparations, right? So now we do that in the beginning, you know. It's not said, you know, we should be careful. You shouldn't kill yourself, you know. Shouldn't go into a coma, right? Like that. But the point is one eats like that. Bhaktivinoda says, akanta bhojan. The kanta is this bone here in the neck. That's why these are called kanti mala. They sit on the kanta, this bone. So akanta bhojan, up to the neck you eat. So that's not a small amount, you know. Shouldn't come out the ears, but up to the neck. Right? Like that. So in the beginning we do that, but with time we start to realize that actually the nice thing is the association of the devotees, taking the bhashad, actually understanding that Krishna has taken this. It's not that, well, if it has cheese in it, it's good, and if it doesn't have cheese in it, it's not good. You know, like that. But we start to realize it's that Krishna's tasted it is what is nice about it. And then we get the realization. Then the overeating goes down. Then we're happy to take whatever Krishna sends us. So the realization has come. Right? So by the process, as Krishna mentions in the Gita, offering the senses into the sense objects, then one starts to see that the senses meeting the sense objects is not actually what gives any taste. Right? But without knowledge of that, which is gained, the first class brahmachari has that knowledge. Without that knowledge, and without the controlled senses, that one engages properly the senses in the Lord's service according to prescribed duties, that realization won't come. So we see from going through the Grihastha Ashram, then the husband and wife, they come to this conclusion, and then the natural next step is vanaprast. Right? The ideal is both husband and wife have the same realization, but at least somebody should get the realization. Right? If we don't get it this life, then we'll have to continue the process next life. Right? Because we have to become detached from thinking there's some value in the material world. Right? We must come to the point where we understand the only value is chanting Hare Krishna and associating with devotees. Then we actually have that full understanding. So Prabhupada recommends that we try to go through this system in this life. And that works when it is done properly. Otherwise, we can see, okay, we have a nice, rough family life and we'll become detached, but is it happening? Right? We see devotees, they get married, don't really know what they're doing, don't know the philosophy, don't know what is the prescribed duties of Grihastha Ashram, don't know how to interact with each other, and then that marriage falls apart, right? Then they try again, right? And then second time, a little better, still falls apart, and then, you know, what is it? Third time's a charm, right? So when you're, you know, in your mid-40s or early 50s, you get married again, and then everything is nice and rosy and wonderful, but there's a slight problem, is that, you know, your child will take another 20 years to grow up, so, you know, we can start becoming detached at 70. So, as long as we last until that age, right, then, okay. We don't have a heart attack when we find out who the daughter wanted to marry or, you know, something. Then we may make it to that. But otherwise, it just delays things very much. So the Vedic system is time should be taken. The boys and the girls must be trained properly before marriage so that they actually understand what they're getting into. Right? One has to be very careful of Maya is very clever. And she has a person who works for her. Very expert person. His name is, Kandarpa. Right? His name is Cupid. So he has these neat little arrows, right? These arrows, then they're made out of these flowers, right? Very, very soft and nice. And so he shoots these arrows. And then when these arrows strike in the core of the heart, you think everything is perfect, will be all right, right? You don't have to worry about what the philosophy says, what anybody else says. You know, what the astrologer says, nobody, you know, your parents, anybody. It doesn't matter. It's wonderful, right? This is the special effect of these flower arrows. But then somehow or another, you know, some days after marriage or something, generally within 6 months, or as the South Indian Brahmin women say, the day your wife gets pregnant, means this is what the women say. The honeymoon's over. Kandarpa comes, pulls out his arrows, and walks off. And then you're left with the reality that I've married somebody who I actually don't know because I've been relying on just the feelings of the hormones, right? You know, hormones work pretty good, you know, make you feel very nice and everything's very wonderful. So, therefore, it'll last like this forever, right? Right? The living entity thinks in terms of eternity. Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that this is one of the problems in the material, main problem in the material world, is a living entity is is covered by this illusion, this Brahma, of Vaikuntha Brahma. Right? Everything is eternal. And the other one is Ananda Brahma, that he thinks everything is happiness. So whatever we look for that in what we're doing. And we think that the happiness I'm experiencing now is very nice. So it must last forever. But unfortunately, Maya's more clever. And then we find out, then here's the reality of what we have to deal with. So the Vedic culture understands this, separates the boys and girls, trains them both nicely so they're not under any illusion. And then when they come across Kandarpa, it's just, you know, some extra added topping on the reality of the actual marriage life. And so it doesn't bewilder them. They may be very happy for some time, but they're not bewildered of what is the reality of grihastha life. Therefore, that's why the Vedic system makes this point of seeing that the arrangement is made for the study and training in both the philosophy and in the culture and its practice, and that there is some arrangement on how you put boys and girls together. Right? So first class means they look for this. Right? First class brahmachari doesn't go out and look, okay, who's the best looking brahmacharini in the temple? Right? He looks for character. Who has the best character? Right? Because if you marry the best looking girl, then you may have a very nice looking kid. But if the kid has no character, then what's the use? Right? So the son takes on the character of the mother. Right? So if the mother is very expert in going out and getting her man, then that's what the son's going to be very expert. He's going to be very expert in going out and getting his woman. Right? And the same in the other. So the man is looking for good qualities in the woman, and the woman is looking for good qualities in the man. And so then to see that these values are common, there must be some way of exchange, because guaranteed, Kandarpa does not give you much opportunity. Right? Once those experiences start happening, one does not actually... it's already wonderful. It's already perfect. Questions are already answered. Right? But questions have to be done before. One has to see, is there a commonality in values? Right? Because the marriage falls apart generally not over some, you know, fine philosophical point. You know? It falls apart over just lifestyle and values and endeavor. Right? One wants more money, one doesn't want any money. One wants to live in the temple, one wants to live outside the temple. Outside the temple, one wants to live simply, one wants a big house. You know, in the house, then, you know, we're going to spend so much money. We're not. Kids are going to go to Gurukul. No, they're not. They're going to Harvard. You know, like this. We're going to be very strict and eat only Krishna Prasad. Why are you so fanatic? You know? And then you add in the other things, you know, leaving the socks around the house and passing urine on the toilet seat and all these kind of things that drive you nuts. You know? So one has to see that the culture is very similar, and the values are very similar. And then it's worthwhile. Then you can see, okay, is there a match? But the idea that the boy and the girl will work it out themselves isn't such a great system. I mean, we see in the Western world that's the very common system, but we also see the divorce rate is about 3 out of 4. Some places 4 out of 5. So it's not the best of systems. Why is it not the best? Because you actually never get to know the other person. Because as soon as you get together, the modes of nature are arranged that when the boy and girl are together, then they become so sensitive that it appears everything is so nice. Right? You're moving down the path, You're coming to a path, you know, that's not big enough for both to go through. The sensitivity is very high. Who's going to go first? And you look for all kinds of subtle nuances to understand this. Where to sit, what you're going to talk about, what you'd eat. You know, does this one want this? Should I or let them or this? Very, very sensitive. So you figure everything's fine. But somehow or another, once marriage is gone, the sensitivity goes out the window. And then it's back to what I want and what they want and everything, and then it turns into a riot. So now without training, this sensitivity is only going to last as long as that short period. But with training, that sensitivity will last for the marriage. Because you know that you're being trained to respect the other person. The other person is an individual. You know what your duties are. The other person knows what their duties are and what, how to cooperate. So it's training. Right? Like that. The animals don't have to worry about this because Paramatma instructs them. Right? Means the karmis call it instinct. Prabhupada mentioned just super soul tells them what to do. So it works perfectly for them. But for the human being, one is given choice. Animals, no choice. Human beings given choice. So now you can choose whether to act as a human or whether to act as an animal. Right? So this needs some training. Therefore, we need the shastra. We need somebody to guide us in that, and we need the support and experience of those who have gone through it. Right? So this is why in the Vedic system that there was all these things of the closer family, the joint family, the tight community, the elders of the community. They have the experience. They've gone through. Elders in the community, they've seen their marriage, they've seen so many other marriages, and they can tell you all the little tricks, very simple stuff, simple. Simple. I think Krishna Kshetu was asking some devotees in South America, nice devotees, you know, well situated and, you know, been married quite nicely, you know, no problems. And he asked, well, what would you say is the essential point that makes everything work? The husband said, very simple. He said, I'm the GBC and the wife is the temple president. Right? So the GBC is to see that everything goes very nicely and the standards are kept, but the temple president does the management. they're a hands-on manager. That was, you know, like this. They can give so many nice things because they have the experience. Right? Like that. And the scriptures know. I've seen so many times someone gets into the marriage and you say, you know, some things, you know, because the brahmacharis, they always joke with each other about, you know, falling in the well and all this kind of stuff. And then, no, it's not like that, you know, this is different and all this, and you hear that. And then you come back after 5 years, 10 years, and, you know, before that they're saying, oh, Bhagavatam, exaggeration, doesn't really understand, or, okay, the sannyasis see all this, they don't really know what they're talking about, and what's he, all these things. You come back after 10 years, Bhagavatam, 108% correct. Like that. So you see, so the point is if you go into it with knowledge, then you actually get something out of it. Otherwise, why go through so many years and waste your time? Right? Why go through and waste time? The whole reason going into it is because of the emotional security, all these other aspects that we still have faith in the material world for. We still have a need for. So now if we go into this with knowledge, then we find, then we actually gain from it, we see that these things aren't actually what makes us satisfied. Right? You know, the girl is thinking, The security, right? You'll get security. Things will be secure. You don't have to live in the brahmacharini ashram, God forbid. And, you know, everything will go very, very nicely. I'll have all the facility, this, that. You know, the husband's there, take care, this, that. But we only look for the time when the passion is in the body. Because if you look at it realistically, then who dies first? The grandmother, the grandfather, Grandfather. Yeah, grandfather. So that means at the end, the woman's going to be alone anyway. Right? So then one figures this out. You know, the realization comes. And then one realizes that, yes, I do have to depend upon Krishna. It's Krishna who's going to take care. I have all the house, I have all the money, but you can't manage it. How do you take care? So ultimately then one sees these things actually aren't the real substance. These are not the things that I'm really looking for that I think I'm going to get out of it. But how do you get rid of it? Only by knowledge and then practice. If one practices with knowledge, this is what Krishna says in the Gita, you perform prescribed duties in knowledge with detachment, then you actually become advanced. Then you actually get realization. Then it comes very, very nicely. And that's what the purpose of the ashram is for. Then what happens when the husband and wife come to the platform of Vanaprastha? Now they're at the same point that the brahmachari got that was a naistika. It took another few years, but what's a few years in, you know, been in the material world since time immemorial? Right? So what's 20 years? 15, 20, 25, what's it? Nothing. We may make a big deal out of it because we think this life is something important. But it's nothing. So if someone spends that time because they honestly think that it's required, then it's no loss. Because the point is you want the result. The result is what we want. Detachment from Maya, attachment to Krishna. That's what we want. So either we get it by hearing, we get it by seeing, or we get it by experience. Right? So these are the ways to get. Right? This is the system. And then Prabhupada says then the worst is we experience and still we don't learn. So we have to be knowledgeable before, then as we experience it, then what we've heard and what we've seen makes sense. Then we realize. Then the whole system is very perfect. Right? It goes through very, very nicely. Right? Very, very, the Vedic system is very wonderful in that it recognizes the needs and nature of everybody. And lets them do that, but in a regulated way for Krishna. Right? It allows it. And by that proper practice, then one is freed from those attachments. Right? We're freed from the attachments. So it's not a problem. Like that. Then depending, as we discussed before, one is, then this is the ashram. Then the varna. Then accordingly, then one will live more or less opulently, or, you know, more passion, endeavor will be there or less. You know, the Brahmin generally will be less, Kshatriya Vaishya more, like this. So then in the Grihastha Ashram, then one has to see how to situate oneself. Is the passion more, is it less? You know, what is there? And then deal with it. You know? Like that. You know, we see that we have, okay, we can live very simply. We're satisfied, you know? A few dhotis or a few nice saris, we're happy. And like that. But if we find, no, more desire is there, okay, we keep more. Right? We keep more. And then with time we will see, actually even I have more, still I'm not satisfied. Then we realize, actually, this is not what makes me happy. This is not actually. But the Vedic system allows, we can go through it. And we don't criticize. We don't criticize, oh, how come this one has more or this or that? It's allowed. As long as you can maintain it, and it comes without over-endeavor. Right? If one over-endeavors, that is the problem. Right? And then one sees. It goes very nicely. So the Vedic system is you can be detached, but still work within it. Right? Because the detachment is either theoretical, for or it is realized. Right? But in either case, detachment is there. That is the purpose of human life, is detachment. So we're detached, theoretically, though we still have the desires. So then we go through those desires, but according to rules and regulations. Then we find it works very nicely. Very nicely. And so Krishna is very kind. He's given rules and regulations for everything. And if we follow that, and if we try to understand it, then we are very satisfied. Very, very satisfied. And if we don't, we're not satisfied. We're not satisfied. But Krishna is so kind, he gets down to every little detail. There's nothing he's left out. If we don't understand it, it looks like a whole lot of rules and regulations. But we understand it. Behind that is the purpose of detachment from Maya and attachment to Krishna. Because all these rules, Krishna follows them himself in his pastimes. So they're all part of rasa. But now the point is to turn our attention from material rasa to spiritual rasa. Right? Krishna is not expecting things to get dry and boring. Right? We may say, okay, the person is very renounced, you know, lives under a tree and all that. But he's not having any difficulty doing that. He likes living under the tree. It's very easy and natural. Right? It's not that every day he's thinking, well, I should be in a big palace and that. No. According to philosophy, detached. No, it's very natural. So like this, it comes very, 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 very wonderfully. So then from that, then vanaprast, then one again starts studying very seriously again, then spending more time, because now there's, you know, very minimal or none, hardly any duties in the house. You know, children are grown up, all these different, you know, already, you know, been there, done that. So all these things, then we can just move on. And then time can be spent more for study, more for devotional practices, more for association, you know, traveling, playing, seeing places, doing things one hasn't been able to do, with the purpose of deepening one's understanding. And at this point now, one can start training those who are younger, who are now just coming into this. You know, either those who are still in the student stage, or those who are now within the Grihastha Ashram. You know, I've seen some of the best brahmachari lectures, most convincing brahmachari lectures, I can remember two, that were given by women. You know, really honest, brahminical women. They just, you know, they heard one brahmachari wanted to get married, and by what they had seen, this brahmachari had good potential for being a good brahmachari. And they just told them. I says, this is what's happening. And, you know, they were quite convincing. Like that. Because of the understanding. So the whole point is this vanaprastha is for training. Starting to study oneself and starting to train others. And then, when one moves into renounced, and then one's simply dedicated to this studying and teaching. Right? So the point is that one must come to the stage of realization. So we can get that early in life, or we can get it later in life. But in any case, we must get it. Right? Is it beg, borrow, or steal, but get realization, right? Isn't that how it goes? That Charvak saying, right? Okay, is there any questions on this? Yes, ma'am. Than the Upakurvana. Okay. So the question is the attachment or relationship between the Naistika Brahmachari and the spiritual master greater than the Upakurvana who gets married? Basically not. It's just a matter of whether how much one can learn at a time. Because it's a matter of relationship, like that. It means that the Naistika may have learned many things and can learn at an accelerated pace, while the Upakurvana, then some aspects have to be gone through step by step. But the relationship doesn't have to be any less deep. It depends upon how nice you follow. Because the point is the instruction of the spiritual master is still going to be followed as a grihastha. So if one is taking that as one's life and soul, following those principles so that one comes to that realization, then what's the difference? So technically in the Vedic concept, there's no difference. The only difference is time. Right? Second class brahmacharya, that's another thing. Third class, fourth class, like this. Right? Means if we're getting married because of lust, that's not very good. Right? We see lust is there. Attachment is there. But we understand what is the grihastha ashram, what is the duties there, what it has to be accomplished. And one has the determination and the responsibility to get it done. Right? Means that you go through the whole point until you actually get the realization. Otherwise, if one doesn't have, see, first class brahmachari, first class trained, then they know that if there's any difficulties in the marriage, that's not because of the other person. That is just because mixing oil and water have two different natures. And you can shake them up for some time, but after a while, then it starts to separate. It's natural. It's just the way it is. You know? You're putting together two different species, right? But now these two species can work very nicely together if the ground rules are understood. One understands one's own nature, one understands the other nature, and you understand what is the relationship. Then it works very, very nicely. And then both parties are able to get out of it what they need. And both parties are able to overcome the conditioned nature that makes them two different species. Right? And then they come to the platform that they're both devotees. Right? Because on the platform, you're not marrying the souls. Right? This idea of soulmates, this, that. That's nothing. It's nothing to do with it. The souls are connected to Krishna. And depending upon the rasa, then your friends and your associates are those who are in the same rasa. Right? Or those who are in the same, at least, movement of the rasa. Means in the pastimes. Right? But what you're marrying is the conditioned natures. The gross and subtle bodies. Because that is where the problem lies. I still identify with the gross and subtle body. Therefore, I go through the system of marrying this gross and subtle body to another gross and subtle body. And if I mix that according to the proper rules and regulations, then both parties should understand that we're not the gross and subtle body. Right? And then that's what you want. That's what one wants. One wants to be able to conquer over the material nature. But one does it within the framework of what one's nature is. Right? Then, that's done. That's why Krishna says, better to do your own duty not so perfectly than someone else's very nicely. So there's no difference. Right? There's no real difference. The point is, it's just a matter of time, what you have to do to come to that realization. Like that. So, that's there. So the second class or third class, like that, they actually think that the problem is the other person. You know, I married this person, they're supposed to be so wonderful and all that, and then you find out they're not. Right? Then, at least what you conceived was wonderful. Then, you figure, well, if I break off this relationship, start another one, then that will be better. And like this, one can go on for a long time. Why this life? Many lifetimes. So therefore, that is the reason that one tries to understand who we are as souls and what actually is the conditioned nature. Right? What is the conditioned nature? And then accordingly, take that medicine. Right? And then then everything goes nice. So nobody, no honest person should complain, what is the particular medicine, right? Those who are the brahmachari sannyasi shouldn't complain about somebody becoming a grihastha, you know, having children, having facility. Lord Chaitanya was very happy when he found his grihastha devotees were having children, because then he says that these are going to be nice devotees, trained right from the beginning in Krishna consciousness, right? Conceived in Krishna consciousness. So he's very happy with that. At the same time, the grihastha shouldn't think, you know, then write off the brahmachari. Ah, there are no brahmacharis. They're just, you know, unmarried bachelors in saffron. You know? This is called uninformed from both sides. Both sides don't actually understand the devotional process. We may understand the philosophy, but when you apply it, you have to apply it on whether one's kanistha madhyam uttam. If you're uttam, okay, we'll run just with the philosophy. But if we're kanistha or madhyam, means we have a conditioned nature. And unless we can accommodate the sadhana bhakti, the process of sadhana, and the whole varnashram system, we actually don't understand the complete process for taking the living and conditioned soul back to Godhead. Like that. So that is what is. So there shouldn't be any difference like this. But as we develop material identity, I am a brahmachari, therefore grihasthas are off the wall. Or now, okay, there's a group of brahmacharis, then a few of them get married, you know. Then as married persons, they say, we know those brahmacharis, we grew up together, you know. We know how they stash the halava and they do all this and that, you know, the big, big brahmacharis. So why don't they be honest and just get married, you know? But that's not the system. This means I think I am a brahmachari. I think I am a grihastha. I think I am a man. I think I am a woman. No. I see what is my conditioned nature. Study it and understand, okay, this is where I am at. Now, what are the rules and regulations for that position? And then how to practice those rules and regulations so that I cut this attachment. I cut this identity. And in this way, then, I go back to Godhead. You know, it's a very straightforward process. The problem that gets in the way is the false ego. Is the difficulty is, you know, like you have the really tough guy, right? The man's man. If he gets sick, will he admit he's sick? You know, he's doing something and everybody else saying, no, you're sick, just say no. Like that. Can he cure his disease? No. Does everybody else think, yes, he's such a great guy because, you know, despite his sickness, he's going out there and foolishly doing everything and making a mess out of everything because he's too sick to do his work? Everybody's appreciating? No. So the first thing is give up the ego and just accept, okay, I have my conditioned nature is like this. Now how to deal with it? What does Krishna say how I should deal with my conditioned nature at the stage I'm at? What does he say for my sadhana? What does he say in the matter of varnas and ashrams? What does he say in, you know, the platform of development of faith and the chanting of the holy name? So, for my position, what is the best position? What should I do? Right? Sanatana Goswami, he did. That's what you see. A conversation starts like that. Otherwise, why have that part of the conversation? He approaches Lord Chaitanya. He says, I am a fool. Right? But if you looked at it materially, he is not a fool. Right? Look at Sanatana Goswami. He is the treasure for Nawab Hussein Shah, who is the king, regional king of Bengal. Bengal at that time is a lot of Orissa, all of what you know as Bengal now, all of Bangladesh, and basically you take all Assam, Manipur, and all that side over there. That's all basically Banga. That's Bengal. It's not a small amount of area. I mean, just in West Bengal, as of the census in, I think it was 84, right, 15 years ago, there was 100 million people in Bengal. It's a little dinky place. And Bangladesh had 90 million. So it's probably 200 million in this little place, you know? So 100 million here. And so that's one state. You have, what, 29 states in India? And so, and then you, the other 800 million, you have to divide between the whole rest of India. So of all the places that are most populated, this site is the most packed. So it's a big place, you know? I mean, you see, what's his name? Raghunath Das's uncle, Hiranya Mazumdar and Govardhan Mazumdar. They each minted at that time 4 million gold coins a year, right? I mean, a gold coin is, you know, worth a few crackers, right? So they were billionaires back then. And they are just one of the small tax collectors that work under the Nawab. So you can imagine how rich is the Nawab. And Sanatan Goswami is his trusted cash treasurer. He knows all the treasury. The whole treasury is in his hands. So much so, the trust, that the Nawab goes out fighting and doesn't even look at the kingdom. He has so much trust in Sanatan and Rupa that they're not going to do anything. His prime minister and his treasurer, they control everything. He's out. They could easily take over the kingdom. They don't. So his position, he speaks Persian, he speaks Sanskrit, naturally speaks Bengali, right? He's very educated. He's sitting down. If he wants to discuss Bhagavatam, is he sitting with one man? No, it takes 30 Sanskrit pandits to sit with him to actually be able to create a nice discussion. Right? You have to have 30 brains there to bring up enough points that Sanatan Goswami really feels that now this is dynamic. Right? And now when he comes and surrenders to Lord Chaitanya, he says, I'm a fool. Right? But according to material standards, he's got, you know, more money than anybody. He's got a big, huge position, you know, treasure for the king. Right? He's very knowledgeable, and he's a very accomplished in applying his knowledge. He's not one of these, you know, funny, eccentric, you know, academics that can't relate to anybody else and just sits around and babbles. But he's sitting here engaging 30 pundits in discussion nicely. And not only that, he's cultured. When the Nawab walks in, he stands up. Not that he has particular regard for, you know, the Muslim king, but the king represents God. The power of God to manage is there in the monarch. So he stands up. So he's cultured. Right? So all this you put together, I mean, this is something very special. And when he comes in contact with Lord Chaitanya, he says, I'm a fool. Right? Why am I a fool? Because I think I'm very learned. I have a big position. I'm wealthy. I have knowledge. I have respect. I have culture. But I'm a fool. Because I don't actually know who I am as the soul. So if the process starts dynamic, and in other words, anartha nivriti, right? We have shraddha, we have faith. Then bhajana, then we have sadhu sangha. Our faith increases. We associate with the devotees, you know, trying to avoid offense. Then we come to the stage of bhajana kriya. Then in bhajana kriya, when we become serious, then we take up anartha nivriti. The anarthas are going. Krishna will remove so many just by chanting Hare Krishna. But the roots of them, you have to decide yourself to get rid of them. Right? We have made the choice ourselves to come to the material world. We have made our choice to endeavor in the material world and be very interested in distinction, adoration, and profit. So we ourselves are going to have to make the decision we don't want it. Very simple process. We decided we want it in, we have to decide we want out. It's not just going to one day, you know, a little, our fairy god person, right, will come along and touch us on the head with a wand, and then we'll be the pure unalloyed devotee, or we're chanting our japa very seriously outside, and a lightning bolt will hit us, or just when we wake up in the morning, we'll be a pure devotee, or, you know, like that. The point is we have to decide, I want out. I want to give up the desires that have kept me here in the material world. So that is where anartha nivritti gets serious. Right? This means the first half of anartha nivritti is done. Now the second half starts. Right? War with maya. We have to fight, you know. We've had these desires. We've always done these desires. And now maya is just supplying these desires. Like, you know, you go to some place, you know, you're known very well every time you come. They serve you the same meal. They make the same arrangements. And then you come this time and then you say no. And it's kind of, what do you mean no? So we have to actually just head on, just say we don't want. Right? So this means we have to identify that we have them. We have to accept, I have these desires in my heart. I have this conditioning. Then we're able to say, I don't want it anymore. But until you recognize it, it's not going to go away. So much will go away by the grace of the Holy Name, but at some point, we have to make that decision ourselves. Right? Between maya and Krishna. So this is the difference. Right? So when one makes that commitment and pushes on with that, then one starts to become steady in devotional service. And this is called nishta. Right? Anishta bhakti means it's just happening. Right? I'm just going along, I'm in ecstasy, you know, like that. And that, whatever. But at some point I have to decide, no, I am making the decision that I don't want to be involved in material activities. I want to develop my love for Krishna, my taste for the Holy Name. I want to stop, you know, criticizing devotees and all these things. And I want to become serious. Then the process starts moving dynamically. Right? Then it's now a matter of getting situated nicely in the practice. Means, well, we have the determination, but it takes time to get it practiced. We'll decide today I'm going to be very strict and serious and no prajalpa, and then we'll talk. Then we'll make more commitment, like this, slowly, slowly. It'll come. Then we get over these things. Then finally, then Krishna is going to give the subtle. Okay, now you're doing this nice, then people are coming to you saying this is wonderful, nice, you're respected, you're advanced, you're all this thing. And then one cannot become overwhelmed by that respect and facility. Right? So this means we have to be consciously making that commitment. If we don't, then Maya will, she'll win the battle. So we have to be, so this is part of the process, just going through and recognizing, okay, well, I have this conditioned nature. Now how am I going to deal with it? Right? What does Krishna say in his books? How to deal with my conditioned nature? Okay, I'm a brahmachari. Okay, what does he say a brahmachari should do? Right? Be humble, menial servant, work under the spiritual master, study, you know, all these things. Okay, I find, no, my nature is grihastha. Okay, what does Krishna say in grihastha life? How we should do? What is the relationship? What is the endeavor? What is the understanding? What is the vision? Right? You know? Oh, no, I've been through that. Now I want to get out of that and become more detached from that. What does Krishna say? Okay, vanaprastha, he gives so many different things. So like this, we go through until we become completely on the platform of sannyas. Right? Daiva Varnashram means everybody in the system is on the platform of the understanding of sannyas. In that, we understand that my prescribed duties I do for Krishna and the result is His. So I've given up the activity that creates the fruit. I do the activity, but the activity is not mine. I'm not the doer. Krishna is doing. Krishna, through the modes of nature, is getting it done. And the fruit's His. I simply desire to engage my conditioned nature in His service. So that is sannyas. But then eventually we come to the point where the realization is there, it's not theoretical. And then, we're on that platform. And that means then, we're attached to Krishna. We try to attach ourselves to Krishna. other questions? Yes, ma'am.
It's from yesterday. One question I have is how one should take care of their dependents.
How one should take care of dependents.
And those who are under
us. Uh-huh. Yeah. The question is how do we take care of dependents, you know? Those who are under us, Shudras or other family like this. Maybe we could, would it be alright if we take that up tomorrow? Because right now we've just talked basically about ourselves. You know, then we have to talk about how we relate to others and stuff like that. So that's okay? Let me do it. You had? Yes.
You said that the some years of training and education is needed. To be properly to get into Grihastha Ashram. But the experience is that many people join our movement and Krishna consciousness in their 20s, 25 or later, and there is no time for proper education like in Gurukula. So what is solution, the best solution for them?
Okay. Question is that someone joins late in Krishna consciousness, means they're not joining as a Gurukul child, then how do they get that training? Because it's later, especially if they want to get married. So, basically, some time must be spent for this. Means no matter what it is, better wait a little time and then get trained and then get married. Otherwise, one may say, well, time's running out, but I see nowadays, you know, there's still devotees getting married, you know, in their 40s or 50s. Because due to lack of training, they weren't able to actually perfect what they went through. Right? So better wait a couple of years and then have a marriage that works, rather than dive into it and then have to go through two or three to make it work. You know? Like that. So the time is always better. I mean, it's very common in India, I've seen, that someone will, you know, I remember seeing one boy had gone to school, finished his school, started his business, then was developing the business and all this, and I asked him, you know, how old he was, and he was, I think he was like 24. And I said, you know, are you planning to get married and all that? He said, yes, you know, like that. And I said, well, when? He says, another few years. I have to get the business to the point where it's making profit, not just reinvestment. I have to secure the house, get, you know, so many different things lined up. Then we'll get married and move in. So he was planning to get married 27, 28. But then it's set up. It works. You know, that's the difference you see in India is that it's understood the responsibility of grihastha life is taken very seriously. So the euphoria of the first meetings of the boys and girls, that's just a side bit. You know, that's not, you know, it's just like someone who actually understands nutrition understands you eat this particular balanced diet. You know, Prabhupada gave us rice, dal, sabji, chapatis, take milk, take fruit. It'll maintain the health. It's a side thing is that you cook it should taste nice. But you understand is you have to get these elements in place. You don't get all these in place, you don't have a balanced diet. So in India, they understand grihastha life is a very serious thing. You have to get everything in place. So there, everybody works for that. And when it's all in place, then they get married. They know then it'll go nicely. Well, the Western thing is in the euphoria of it, let's take the dive. You know? And then they find they're not prepared. You know? They didn't take any water with them, and when they hit the bottom of the well and they found out it's only rocks, then they got thirsty. You know? So the whole thing is the Vedic system would prepare one for that. One knew. Right? So if this is understood, then the leaders will prepare for that kind of training. But that's done as a brahmachari, following strictly the brahmachari rules. It doesn't mean, well, you're going to get married, so it doesn't matter, you can be loose and this and that. No, that's automatically right there, at best, second-class brahmachari. Because that means he's not controlled, he's not determined. How's he going to get through the whole thing? How's he going to bring up the kids? Right? First few years, they drive you nuts. Then they're a little bit pleasant in the middle. And then when they hit teenage, they drive you nuts again. So how are you going to have the determination to get through that? If you can't even just spend a couple of years to be trained nice as a brahmachari. So this means that the grihasthas who are mentioning that, they themselves are not first class. And the brahmacharis who are accepting this, they also at least aren't going to become first class. Like that. So the responsibility, those who are, then they know. Right? Means you can ask, means many of these things is, you have to see the whole broad range of what it is. It's very, very important. The senses aren't controlled, right? Brahmacharis mainly control of the senses, respective authority, cleanliness, menial service, study of the shastra. In other words, knowledge. Now, the man may have one vision of this, the woman has another vision of this. Right? Many times it's thought, oh, you can't control the sense, you just get married. But you can ask any woman, what woman can respect a man who can't control his senses? Right? She just has to put on a little special perfume or just move a little bit and then she's flattened the guy. You know, what respect can she have for that person? Right? Okay, maybe you can get a few things out of the guy or have a little fun, but as far as really serious. So if the boy doesn't have controlled senses, what woman can respect? Right? If he doesn't have knowledge, how is he going to deal with applying grihastha ashram to Krishna consciousness? Seeing the workings of the material world. How is that going to work? It's not going to happen. Right? He doesn't have respect for authority means he doesn't have respect, period. How is he going to respect the wife? Right? How is he going to teach respect to his children? If he doesn't respect, no one's going to respect him. If the wife doesn't respect the husband, the children aren't going to respect anybody either. Right? The children respect the mother because they see the mother respects the father. And they see the father respects others. Right? And so what's that called? That's called parampara. Right? And so it starts off for the children as a material. Mother's first guru, father's second guru, teacher's the next guru. Then he gets down to the serious spiritual guru. But if the principle of parampara hasn't been established by the respect that's generated by the brahmachari being able to evoke that respect from the wife, who then gives it to the child, that child will have great difficulty respecting or surrendering to authority. You take it. You take our children, and the ones who have great difficulty surrendering to even the concept of spiritual authority, you know it's kind of good, but they can't do it. Go into that house and find out how the husband and wife deal with each other. And if they fight like cats and dogs in front of the kid, like that, then you can understand there's the source. Right? Because the respect. Now that's because the boy didn't learn how to respect others. So he can't command respect. You can only get what you can do. Right? Menial service. If he doesn't have the attitude of service, how is he going to actually perform the activities, the occupational duties to maintain the grihastha ashram? Right? And if you don't have determination to wash a pile of pots, how are you going to have the determination to, you know, 15, 20 years of, you know, maintaining the ashram? Right? Not possible. You know? If he's not clean, then externally he's not clean. One, he's going to drive the wife nuts. But two, he can't maintain the inside clean. Right? Then his senses can't be controlled. He can't be respectful to others. He can't gain knowledge. Right? So these things must be done. If someone is of the philosophy that everybody's going to get married, then they should take this brahmacharya training very seriously. And if they don't, means to them grihastha ashram is just, you know, just some inevitable thing that comes along and everybody kind of deals with it and there's nothing to be really gained, and you know, or they take it very lightly, or because the Vedic system takes it very seriously. Because one of the aspects, major aspects of the Grihastha Ashram is the children. They're the next generation. And if the Grihastha couple is not of deep understanding, the child is not going to be deep understanding. Right? Like that. You see in the Bhagavatam and that when it talks about highly qualified children, you also notice it talks about the highly qualified parents. They may be more prominent than the parents and do greater things, but you can see where the connection comes. You know, father, mother, very religious, very serious, very, you know, dutiful, very, do all their duties properly, very clean, very devotional. And then they have children who become very great personalities. Right? Like we see. Where is it? Narad Muni, previous life as a son of a maidservant. So this maidservant is doing very nice service. Right? He has gained that quality of service from his mother. Right? There's no father. And the son takes on the quality of the mother. Because of that, his mother has such a good service attitude, he had such a good service attitude, and he was very serious, right, in his own mind. Prabhupada points out in the purport that kids are always playful. But in his mind, he was very serious, didn't play, didn't get into this. We know kids play anyway, even if they say they're not playing, they're playing. You know, they walk down and they laugh and they dance and this and that, but he is not in an organized way. He's very serious because his mother is very serious. And then he gets the mercy of those Mahabhagavats. Right? And then from that service, knowledge and service give realization. Then when his mother died, very shortly later, he just went off. He basically just took vanaprastha and just traveled. See, the qualities are gained from the mother. Right? You know, you see the qualities of Kardama. I mean, excuse me, Kardama. Kapila. And you look at his mother's qualities. Right? Very, 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 very gentle. Good service attitude. You know? Worked very, very nicely. All these nice qualities. You see those same qualities in Kapila. Right? Very dutiful. Right? She was dutiful to Kardama. He is dutiful to his mother, right? He said, okay, father, I'll take care of mother now. And then he said, thank you, and he left. Right? He could have also said, well, you know, see you later. But she was dutiful, he's dutiful. Right? So you see directly the qualities. Take the same husband, you know, and, no, excuse me, it's different. Then another example. Take Kasyapa. Take his wife, Aditi. Very devotional to the Supreme Lord. Follows the Vratas very nicely. Right? She wants a son. Right? So what does she do? She just walks into his room one day and just says, you know, let's go for it. Right? No. She decides, she comes to her husband, we want to have a child, this, that. She gets trained in the Payavrata, she performs all those vratas, then what? Who's her son? Right? Vamana. So all the Adityas, all the great personalities come from her. Because she followed the principle that Krishna and Gita said, that sex life according to the regulative principles, then Krishna's that. So then she got those kind of sons. Right? Same husband, now we have Aditi. Excuse me, Diti. So now, what was Diti's process? She hears that her sister has had children, and she is envious. And she feels that her position is less because she doesn't have any children. Right? So she's envious, she's interested in position. Right? Position means like for many times, especially amongst those very cultured women, very much feel a position by having children. When they have the child and there's a woman without a child, the one with child, you know, feels very comfortable. The one without feels that she's missing out. right? So it's for them is like their, no, it's like the wealth. What do you call it? Say, what is it? Renunciation is the wealth of the Brahmins. So for the women, their wealth many times is their dharma and their children. Right? So she's interested in this. Right? And then she goes into the husband. Is something planned? No, he's sitting there doing his meditation, finishing the evening Sunday, he's just done his yajna like this, and she comes in and says, I want a kid. So then he says, you know, okay, but let's at least wait until this muhurta is gone, right? Muhurta is 24 minutes. 24 minutes. He's only asked her, wait 24 minutes. She says, no. Right? So then by all her talk, this, sitting this way, that way, and all that, she agitates his mind. So then he enters into this relationship due to lust. And she's entering into it with desire for, you know, position and envy. And then, what is their kid? Right? Hiranya Kashipu. Wealth and soft bed. So it's direct. It's that scientific. It's just like that. So if training is there, then one can get better quality. So the next so that's also the next generation, because they're the ones that have to carry on. So otherwise, then it drives everybody nuts. So the point is that time must be taken. Even if it's a short time, but time must be taken. And if one is joined and one's already a grihasta, if it's going nicely, fine. Otherwise, one should study and understand. Even if it's going fine, we should learn how to engage it in Krishna's service. So the study must go there. Therefore, it says in the Shastra that even after one moves into the grihasta life, those who are serious about spiritual, you know, or culture and spiritual upliftment, then they go through these processes of continuing study on their own. It's not necessarily an organized study, but at least they continue studying. To develop like that. Does that make any sense? So the time must be taken. So those who are leaders, then they should see that it happens. And grihastas should see, you know, and the women should see. The women demand, they're not going to marry bozo brahmacharis, then you're going to see the brahmacharis are going to get serious real quick. Right? But as it is now, women will marry bozo brahmacharis, so the brahmacharis stay bozo, you know? And the men who are leading the thing, they also say, it doesn't matter anyway, they're going to get married. But they don't understand the science. You know? Right? So it's, the whole thing is the culture. The culture must be understood. If the training is not there, then it doesn't go on. You know? You don't have, and nothing works. Right? Nothing works. What time is it now? What is your question? And we'll see.
Some people are saying that in our system there can be also the period when the boy and girl, they first become engaged and then they go together, and then if it's not okay, they finally don't even go to marriage. So is there any that kind of system?
Uh huh. Okay, I can say in summary. The question is that we have a system where the boy and girl like engage, or they call it association. They spend time together, see if they're compatible, all this. And then after that, if it works, if it doesn't work, they break it off, and if it works, then they get married. So in the Vedic system, do they have that? So basically, how you say? Let us look at this seriously. How many of the boys and girls who associate with each other actually, when they find it's not compatible, break it off? That's the first question. Because the point is, as Krishna mentioned, the Gita, the living that's the difference between him and the living entity. The living entity deals with material nature, he becomes attached. Krishna deals with it, he doesn't. So therefore, the boy and girl, when they deal with each other, they just become attached. So the Vedic system understands this. So once they're attached, it doesn't matter at that time whether things look good or bad. They'll somehow or another try to see the bright side. But the Vedic system is before that time when they see each other, then it's already worked out. Right? Means whoever is the leaders, either the parents, the temple authorities, the community leaders or well-wishers, somebody first sees, they know your nature. Right? In other words, someone who knows your nature, then they try to find someone else who has a similar nature. They know how you work, what your values are, what you need, this and that. Then they try to make arrangements. When they find some arrangements, then at that time, then you get to know who it is. So, because if you get attached, the nature is very similar. Right? Like after everything was arranged, then Prabhupada's father came to him with two pictures and said, here are the two girls that we found are suitable arrangements. He can become attached to either one, it doesn't matter. So then Prabhupada looks at the two pictures, naturally looks at, and the one that looks, you know, more attractive, he says, well, this one looks good. And his Prabhupada says, I knew you'd say that, but I'd recommend you take the other one. Like that. Right? So that point is there, but we see it's right at the very end. But if the persons are going to meet each other and then start to work it out from there, very difficult. Very difficult. Krishna is kind, it may work. But generally Maya is not so kind. Right? Maya's tough. Like that. So better, that's why the system of arranged marriages. How do you, sitting there in all the nice, what do you call it, you know, hormonal euphoria, how do you sit there and ask the other person, well, were you planning to have children or not? If so, how many? You know, and were you planning to, now you're fully in the temple, were you planning to live in full-time service, or were you thinking you would move out of the temple? And who's going to ask those questions? You might have one or two people who are like that, but generally I've seen that that happens before they even meet. I've seen that happen with Indians, where their parents aren't arranging, but others are arranging. And they just write down, this is who I am, this is what I, you know, these are my, this is my nature. These are the things that I can do in household life. These are the things that I'm looking for in a husband or wife. And then that's given to somebody, it goes to the other person looks at it and says, well, forget it, or okay. And then they write back and it goes, and somehow or another it's worked out before they even meet. Right? Because as soon as you meet, then there's the danger that attachment will develop. And once attachment's there, even if it's wrong, we won't give it up. Right? So, therefore, one can use it, but one has to know how to use it and when to use it. In other words, it can only be used when it's at the point that if they do become attached, it doesn't matter because it's pretty close. You know? Astrologically, it's been checked. The people who know the people agree that this is very similar. They may have had some kind of, you know, somebody who knows goes ask these questions and then finds out from the other party if this is compatible. Then it works. Because the whole thing is if it's taken seriously, it has to work. I was talking to one Indian girl the other day. And I asked how is... You know, because they just got married. I asked and I did the ceremony. So then I asked, how is it going? And she says, actually better than I thought. I thought that the boy was actually a little bit more harsh than he is. And she was saying that I'm, you know, very happy, you know, because Krishna was very kind. Because otherwise, once you're married, that's it. So in her mind, how she was trained is who she marries, that's who she's married to. Good, bad, or otherwise. That was the training. And if the boys are trained the same way, then they take it very seriously. But the modern thing is you get married, it doesn't work. You know, you got married, you went down and signed a little piece of paper. You know, both smile at each other, and the guy behind the counter says, you know, I hope everything goes very nicely, or, you know, give some little blessing just to kind of make it a little auspicious. And then you march out of the office, and that's it. You know, it's kind of, what, 30 seconds or something like that. And then in the same way, you go down and you know, and register for divorce, and then after they, you know, work out, all the lawyers get together and find out how much of the estate's going to be divided up amongst who and all that, and all these other niceties, these pleasantries, then it happens. And then, okay, then we just go for another one. But the Indian system is this is serious business. Who you marry is who you stay with. It doesn't work, you separate, and that's it. So if one's trained like that, then one takes it seriously. Otherwise, then we just have to go on until it does. And then, okay, we didn't get it together in the first marriage. Okay, try again. Second marriage, right? Maybe by the third we'll get it. I mean, what was it she went to? Elizabeth Taylor, I think 7, you know, I mean. I think she got it together at the end, you know. You know? A lifetime in preparation. Like that, you know. So the thing is it's unfortunate that we have to fall back on, you know, the hit and miss system of the West. You know, it goes on, whatever. But eventually we have to train the future generations that that's not the system and try to work it out more for them. Now it's more because the boy and girl want to do it themselves and the managers can't control it, so it's kind of, okay, go for it, you know. But eventually it has to come that there is the proper respect for the authorities that you trust them to do. They actually have the mood of surrender, you know, which we'll talk, I mean shelter, what we'll talk, Mataji's question tomorrow, is that they actually want to take care and help them out. Right? And then it works. Then it can work. You know? Because if you really want to make it work, you find the right person. Right? Means the relationship is most important. Right? Management's secondary. So therefore, one temple president, he has a girl, another temple has a boy. They're a very good match, but now why are they not married? Because the president doesn't want to lose the girl. She's a big collector. You know, so unless the boy is agreeable to move to the temple, then forget it. So then he marries to somebody who happens to be there, who doesn't necessarily happen to be a good match, but he thinks in his mind, now I'm going to keep my collector. The marriage doesn't work. She becomes annoyed. You know, the whole thing falls apart. It's just a headache. And then there's a good chance they go off and disappear anyway. Because management was first. Rather than, okay, this girl goes to that temple. Right? Sometimes I have the boy, the girl will come to this temple. You know? And then like that, you just see within a zone or a yatra, however, I mean, so many ways it can be set up. This is not a class on how to set up matchmaking. But in other words, if taken seriously, it would be set up. Right? Devotees are looking for occupational duties. This is a natural one. You don't see it because nobody values, marriage is taken very cheaply. Therefore, there's no people that are there to arrange them. Or to help in some way, either the leaders or someone else. Yes?
Another scenario which you might be aware of, or I can tell you, is that the Tamil president and his wife make some arrangements, but because the dependents don't feel respect, they don't have respect for the Tamil president and the wife.
Yeah.
They want to make their own
arrangements. Their own arrangements. Yeah, yeah. That, you heard that? That's another thing, is that unless the brahmacharis, brahmacharinis are trained in respect, you know, that simplicity and all that, and the relationships are deep, they may not have that faith or respect for the temple authorities who have possibly arranged for them a very nice marriage, but they decide, I want to do it myself. So that's why the whole system is based on these principles. Developing respect, developing knowledge, cleanliness, how you say? Control of the senses, and how do you say them all? And service, yeah, and the menial service. That's just the foundation, the whole training. And when that's there, then you get good leaders. You get good because grihasthas are leaders. Don't become a husband, a mother, a father, you know, a king, a guru, a presiding demigod, unless you can save the dependents from death. So they are leaders. So unless one can follow, one can't lead. Okay, so we'll end here. It's getting late. Thank you. We'll continue tomorrow with Mataji's question. And then we'll come. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitya Gaura Premanandi.